Celebrities, athletes, musicians, influencers, CEOs, entrepreneurs, business owners, experts, politicians, and philanthropists. Welcome to Interviews with Arizonans. Thought-provoking and revealing conversations with Arizona's most interesting and influential people. With your host, founder of Phoenix Homes and Hotspots and Alpha Whale Productions, Todd S. Hall. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to podcast.
Hey, yes, indeed, it is time to podcast. Today, I have a really exciting conversation. One of the things coming out of DC right now is a lot of conversation about, you know, things like raising the minimum wage and things like how people earn a living wage and those types of things. But I think one of the best pieces of legislation that's come out of DC in the last 5 years is something called opportunity zones. And you may or may not be familiar. Maybe you've heard the term opportunity zones. Not quite sure what it is. Today, I have a guest that is literally an expert in this area. They work with opportunity zones every single day. And so we're going to learn what opportunity zones are, but more importantly, what's happening here in the state of Arizona and how opportunity zones are benefiting communities right here in our backyard. But before we do that, let me quickly introduce my other YouTube channel that is Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. Phoenix Homes and Hotspots is basically, if you think about it from a standpoint of somebody moving into a different area, it's very easy to go online and find an actual home today. The difficult part is understanding the community itself and the surrounding area or the actual lifestyle of that home. So what we've done with Phoenix Homes and Hotspots is we've gone out and created videos, put them on YouTube, and those videos are designed to help you get familiar with not just homes, but communities, what these communities have in terms of amenities, but then also what are the restaurants, where are the golfing opportunities, where's the closest hiking, and all the stuff around it. We're really giving you a visual of what that lifestyle around those homes look like. So Phoenix Homes and Hotspots, again, very easy to find homes online. One of the challenges with home shopping online is if you put your contact information in, if you find a home you like, and you put your contact information in to like a web form, then you get a bunch of realtor calls. So you can actually go to phoenixhomesandhotspots.com and just collaborate directly with us, and we'll get out videos to you so you can actually, again, not just see the home, but see that surrounding area as well. If you are listening on one of our audio platforms, you can go to youtube.com/Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. If you're watching on YouTube right now, just click the link on the top right-hand corner. It'll take you there where you can subscribe. Hit that bell, and that way that'll notify you every time we create new great videos. With that, let's jump in, man. I'm super excited about this. Let me introduce Mr. Brian Crum from Caliber Companies. You are the VP of Investments, correct, here at Caliber?
That's correct.
Welcome, my friend.
I'm excited to be here with you, Todd.
Awesome, man. I'm super excited. So let's start. Before we jump into opportunity zones, because we're going to focus most of this conversation directly on that, but just so people have an idea, I was introduced to Caliber, I think back in about 2014, 2015. I actually worked with you guys for several years from a real estate and a commercial, like kind of residential real estate and commercial aspect, but you guys were up to some really exciting things. This is a super innovative company, and you guys just continue to transform yourselves. So tell everybody a little bit more, just so they have an understanding, who is Caliber and what is it that you guys do?
Yeah, Todd, it was great working with you. I actually joined Caliber around the same time in 2014. Caliber is a Scottsdale, Arizona-based real estate investment development company. And what we do on behalf of our investors, we acquire, renovate, build, and operate income-producing real estate. A lot of this has now become in the opportunity zones, and we're diversified into multiple asset classes in the geographic Southwest. We have hotels, office buildings, apartment communities, including student housing. We're going to be developing assisted living. We literally built a hospital last year during COVID. And a lot of this is around the Opportunity Zone program. So I was so excited when you wanted to cover this as one of your topics.
Okay, so So going back, Caliber has been in business since...
Caliber was started in 2009 specifically to help investors take advantage of the displacement that occurred because of the recession. Caliber started off with several young real estate entrepreneurs, basically buying homes off the courthouse steps on behalf of investors, and then gradually moved into commercial real estate, started buying off-market apartment complexes and hotels and renovating them and even reinvigorating some of those communities. And then today, because of the Opportunity Zone program, we have the opportunity to get involved with community revitalization. And it's not just going to be happening in Arizona. We're expanding into Texas. We've got some pretty active projects in Colorado. And we are just excited to be able to make an impact in the communities with these revitalization projects.
Yeah, when I was with Caliber, and I think I was here from 2014 to 2016, if I remember right. But when I was with Caliber, I mean, there was a huge emphasis on hotels. So again, I mean, you guys just continue to watch the market. Obviously, times have changed a lot, especially with COVID the last 2 years. And you guys just continue to evolve. So it's really impressive to watch what you guys are doing. And when I found out you were really focused so heavily on opportunity zones, it was just like, yeah, we have to sit down and discuss that. So what is your story? How do you, and going back as far as you want, right? Like for me, you know, being in the real estate business, I always had an interest as a kid in real estate, right? Not necessarily as a real estate consultant type of thing, which is ultimately what I am today, but really on the investment side. So did you have a passion for investments growing up? What's your story? How do you end up here at Caliber for as long as you have, as successful as you've been? How does that evolve?
Yeah, it definitely all started when I was growing up on the family farm in Ohio. Looking back on it, I didn't appreciate this at the time. My dad owned a business and he was a farmer. And it didn't dawn on me until I started learning more about real estate that everything that my family did was tied to a business. So being an entrepreneur and then being a farmer. And the farmhouse that I grew up in, my parents never had a mortgage on it because it was a loan that they used to buy the farm. And I remember my dad always saying that if you do something related to the ground, that it's hard to lose. And the reason for that is if you own dirt, it always has some sort of an intrinsic value to it. So fast forward to today at Caliber. Now I understand what the difference was between when Dad owned a farm and when Dad would start selling off parts of the farm to home builders and the difference that made in the value of that land. So after I graduated from Ohio State and moved to Arizona, I worked at Merrill Lynch for several years. And I got to the point where I was helping investors, you know, do well, but I didn't have the ability to let people invest directly into real estate in Arizona. So when I met Chris, the founder of Caliber, I really was attracted to the mission of helping good people invest into real estate and have an impact on their local community instead of potentially investing into a fund that then that money went back to Wall Street and never came back into the community.
Right.
So I really like that mantra of investing where you live, banking locally, and then being able to invest into the community that you've been able to be successful with your business.
Yeah. So good. Yeah, I think, you know, anytime a story starts with a farm in Ohio, you know it's a good story. So let's jump in then. What is, you know, by definition, but I mean, what is not so much the definition of it, but what is an opportunity zone? I mean, if for somebody that's just never even heard the term before, what is it?
Yeah, the history of how an opportunity zone became about is really pretty interesting. And it goes back to about 2015. There was a working group called the Economic Innovation Group. And this included politicians from both sides of the aisle. It included successful business people and even some of the original founders of tech companies like Facebook. And they were trying to figure out what do we need to do to reinvigorate certain parts of the United States. And they were identifying that there were certain areas that just hadn't seen the same level of success and recovery after the 2008 and 2009 recession. And one of the key figures that they recognized is that those areas that haven't really recovered also lacked access to capital. So the plan was, what can we do to incentivize people to invest into these underserved communities? And what they decided to do was create the Opportunity Zone program. It was originally put into legislation in 2016, and it got in front of Congress, and it failed to pass. And then at the end of 2017, inside of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, often called the Trump tax bill, it was finally approved. What an Opportunity Zone is and how they work. An Opportunity Zone is a geographic census tract. There are literally like 8,700 of these Opportunity Zones across the whole country. Over 160 of them are in Arizona. Part of what we're going to talk about today are some of the Opportunity Zones that Caliber has been investing into, but it's important to understand the foundation behind why was the Opportunity Zone program started. So this is how it works. If you're an investor and you have a capital gain, keep in mind, it doesn't matter what you sold. It doesn't have to be just real estate. It doesn't have to be stocks. We have people selling Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. Hmm. They're taking their profits and investing them into Opportunity Zone funds. So any capital gain, if it's invested into a qualified Opportunity Zone fund that then deploys at least 90% of that capital into qualifying businesses in an Opportunity Zone, you get three tax benefits. The first tax benefit is a total deferral of owing any capital gains taxes, and this is at the federal level. Most states participate. Arizona does participate on the state level as well. So in Arizona, if you invest into capital gains into a qualified Opportunity Zone fund, you get a deferral of both federal and Arizona state capital gains taxes until the end of 2026. First benefit is deferral. Second benefit actually ends at the end of 2021. So at the end of this year, the second benefit actually goes away. The second benefit is a 10% reduction or a 10% step up in the original cost basis. And I'll use an example. If you invest $100,000 in an Opportunity Zone fund by the end of this year, when you get to the end of 2026, you will only recognize and pay capital gains taxes on 90%, so $90,000. So you get a reduction in the amount of the original capital gain. But this is where it gets really powerful. After a 10-year holding period, an investment in a qualified Opportunity Zone fund will actually have a total exclusion of future capital gains taxes after 10 years. So that $100,000 reduces to $90,000 being taxable in 2026. And then after a 10-year holding period in an Opportunity Zone, when those assets are sold, if there's a profit, the capital gains get distributed 100% tax-free. So it's almost like a Roth IRA at that point.
Wow. So the benefit that ends at the end of this year, does that mean that you have to make an investment before the end of this calendar year to get to receive that benefit? Am I understanding that correctly?
That is correct. Yeah, the investment has to be made by the end of 2021 to get that second benefit, which is a 10% step up in the cost basis.
Got it. Okay. So who benefits? I mean, you've touched on, you know, you've touched on it, but now specifically, who are the beneficiaries of an Opportunity Zone? Who has the opportunity to benefit across the board?
One of the things that Arizona did a great job of, the census tracts were actually selected based on what the 2010 census looked like. And the two rules that you had to follow as a community that was picking where your Opportunity Zones were going to be, did you have census tracts that had 85% or below the average median income, or did you have 20% or greater unemployment? So when all of the cities and towns and counties in Arizona looked at the rules and started picking their census tracts, a lot of them wanted them to be in their downtown core areas if they qualified, as well as transit corridors along light rail is a great example, and also around airports. So these are all areas that you can put a focus on, and if it's in an Opportunity Zone, you can use it to attract businesses and attract capital. I'm going to talk about a couple different areas that have been really revitalized, and a lot of it was related to job creation. Caliber's building hotels, we're building hospitals. We're also investing in a co-working space. So those all have a direct benefit of jobs that are being created, not just during the construction phase, but these are brand new businesses that didn't exist before. So the first benefit is a job creation component. The second benefit is identifying what does each individual Opportunity Zone as a community really need. You know, where are they lacking? So you go out there and you talk to a lot of the stakeholders. You talk to the local business owners. You talk to the residents. You talk to the cities, their economic development. A lot of the mayors are actively involved in this program, especially in Tempe and Phoenix and Mesa, which are three of the main areas that we've been investing into. And you ask them, what do you want to have happen in your opportunity zones? Why did you select this as one of those geographic census tracts that we could raise capital into and deploy it to make an improvement? And a lot of them want to have more affordable housing. Affordable housing, workforce housing. There's over 25,000 apartment units that are being built brand new, ground up today in Arizona. But there's a projected need of over 200,000 multifamily units. If you build them to be affordable in opportunity zones, especially if it's near where people are going to work, you can also reduce traffic. So there's also looking at the impact on the environment as well. Big emphasis on doing renewable energy as an example. If you build something, build it to be very energy efficient, put solar on it. Anything that you can do to reduce the costs for those residents, because the higher someone's electric bill is, as an example, that's less money that they have for something else, which could be food or medicine or even just the ability to save and invest for tomorrow.
So number one, I mean, when we talk about who benefits, number one is, if I heard you correctly, right? Number one is the resident. The whole focus of the program is to take less fortunate communities that have high unemployment, that are struggling finding affordable housing and just cost of living in general, and trying to create benefits for less fortunate folks with lower income type of communities, correct?
Correct. That's definitely one of the areas of impact.
Number two would be the city, right? Mm-hmm. So the city benefits because now we've solved a bunch of problems or challenges that the city faces, such as affordable housing, such as the potential for more homelessness as a possibility, right?
Correct.
And so when you solve the city problem, a lot of time you solve some sort of problem for the residents. Although, you know, if you're a middle income or a higher income family, you may not feel the impact. However, down the road, there are things that you may feel the impact. So we're solving a challenge for the city. We're solving a challenge for the residents. And then number three is in terms of who benefits, obviously, and we'll talk more about this here in a little bit, but number three is that you have an opportunity to actually invest, you know, if you meet certain credentials. And again, we won't talk about it now. We'll talk about it here in a little bit. But you have an opportunity to invest to help better these communities, number one. But also, you get some really great tax benefits. Is that pretty much the
Correct.
Three areas that you would say in terms of who benefits?
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
What is, so? And again, you've kind of touched on this, but maybe expand a little bit. So what is... Well, maybe you've hit it all. So I was going to ask you, what is the positive impact on communities? But I guess you'd really kind of summarize that. I mean, is there anything else? So
yeah,
we've talked about trying to expand employment. We've talked about trying to create more affordable housing and decrease the cost of living, make the cost of living more affordable. Is there anything else? I mean, in terms of positive impact that you're seeing that that these programs are creating?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a couple examples that actually take a few of those different factors into account, the actual improvement that's happened in the community. And I'm going to use the example of a behavioral healthcare hospital that Caliber built last year. So Caliber actually built a hospital in the middle of COVID, obviously very challenging, but our team did an amazing job working through all of those challenges. And what we did in that community in particular, we acquired a vacant assisted living facility where there were homeless people doing drugs. And this is in an area where right behind the hospital is a historic neighborhood where there's a lot of pride in the community. And across the street from it are some of the largest hospitals in Arizona. By buying this vacant assisted living facility, we were able to make a difference in that community. Not only did we create over 100 jobs because now there's a 96-bedroom hospital there, but people that were not getting mental health care treatment now have another place to go to receive treatment, which could include people who may have been living in homelessness, had drug and addiction problems. Mm-hmm. So we've got a job creation component. We've got taking a vacant facility where there were homeless people living, which could have been causing some crime for the local homeowners. So we've gotten rid of that. And then some of those people that may have been displaced probably were in homelessness potentially because of drug or other addiction issues. Now they can actually get treatment potentially in the same facility where they may have been living in homelessness. So that's a great example.
That's an awesome example. So here's the big question in my mind. As is everything in DC, everything is very polarized, right? I mean, we live in this crazy polarized climate. And so you kind of went through the timeline earlier of how these things, how an opportunity zone came about. But at the end of the day, it was enacted in 2017 under Trump with the under that Jobs and Tax Cuts Act. And so, you know, a lot of the critics, you know, when you talked about opportunity zones, people wanted to deflect. I mean, this is what I was hearing in the initial year or two. Now, I'm not saying today, but I'm just talking about initially, people kind of wanted to deflect. Well, yeah, that's not really working anyway, right? It's almost like, Trump did it. Let's pull the rug out from under that. Let's stop the conversation on that. But again, that was in year one, year two, and there were definitely people trying to deflect and make it sound like it wasn't a big deal, which I think was, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was like, hey, let's give this a shot because it seems like a pretty good piece of legislation, regardless of who it was enacted under. And you said it was a bipartisan bill that both parties supported. So at the end of the day, so here's my question. Is it working? And you've already given a pretty good example, but I mean, from what you're seeing, is it working? And do you think that this is something, and you know, at some point, some of these tax incentives are going to go away as well. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe some of them get reinstituted as we go, but is it working? And how do you, and do you think, if so, do you think it'll continue to prosper into the future?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of criticism around the fact that this got passed under Trump because a lot of people were saying, hey, this is going to be a way for people that made a lot of money in real estate like Trump to be able to defer taxes. And there's no disagreeing with that. But the average person that's been investing with us, these are hardworking people. They might have been selling some real estate. They might have had a good year in the stock market. A lot of families are in the process of selling, generations of family businesses. These are hardworking people that are actually being able to take advantage of it, including people that might even be investing some of their charitable trusts into these opportunity zones. So we're definitely seeing a lot of people across the country being able to take advantage of it. And they're really excited about that impact that they can have on the community with their dollars. Is it working? What we've seen is it's absolutely working because we have all these great examples of revitalizing communities. One of the investments that we completed earlier this year was the completion of the Tucson Convention Center Hotel. So it's a Hilton by DoubleTree. There's about 430 DoubleTrees in the country. This one is already ranked as one of the top hotels in that brand as far as like customer service and things like that. I mean, we're in conversations with local business people in downtown Tucson. They're already telling us that they're seeing an uptick in traffic, an uptick in the number of people that are coming to events and staying down there because now there's a hotel connected to it. And it's not just a hotel Very cool. connected to a convention center. It's also connected to an arena. So there are people that are coming down there for concerts and sporting events that are staying in the hotel. They're going into the local businesses down there. So this is really an example of, yes, we build a hotel in an opportunity zone, but it's already having an impact on bringing more people down to that area. And when you're doing that coming out of COVID, that's crucial because a lot of those businesses struggled just to stay open. So now the fact that you're bringing more people into an area that are benefiting the local businesses, helping them create jobs, I think that's a great example of another success of the program.
So you just mentioned revitalization, and revitalization is nothing new. And a lot of times when you think about opportunity zones, or when I hear opportunity zones, to me, opportunity zones and revitalization almost go hand in hand. They really seem like the same thing. Are there, other than the tax benefits that were actually enacted with this particular program, are there other, I mean, is that pretty much what we're talking about is revitalization with tax benefits, or are there other differences?
I mean, there are areas where you don't have to do revitalization, but you might have vacant land. And depending where it is and what the nature of the zoning is, you could literally be building hospitals, you could be building mixed-use communities, you could be building more affordable housing. So it doesn't have to be just an existing property that gets revitalized. It's looking where is the demand for certain types of real estate, certain types of businesses, and then building ground up. The first hospital we built was a renovation. The rest of the hospitals that we're in the process of planning to build in conjunction with very established operators, a lot of them are going to be ground up. So there's going to be a lot more mental health care services being provided in those areas. And there's been a shortage of health care treatment and just recognition of the need for it across the country. And the fact that these opportunity zones are being used to bring more behavioral and mental health care to people in those communities, I think, is another great example of this program working.
Yeah, for sure. So we talked about Caliber and kind of going through the process and how Caliber continues to evolve as a company, right? From its inception through when I was here, hotels. And so you start to hear this buzzword, opportunity zones, it's coming. Is this something that you hear coming down the pipeline? And as a company, you're just like, hey, when this hits, we're hitting the ground running. I mean, when do you guys jump into this thing?
As I mentioned, the program was put into law at the end of 2017, but it took a couple of months at the beginning of 2018 for all of the states to kind of understand the rules and start making the selection of where their opportunity zones were. Arizona was one of the first states in the country to actually pick where their opportunity zones were going to be. And when they announced them, and then when you look at what the rules are, which it means that you have to basically make a substantial improvement in a building when you buy it. So you can't just buy an apartment complex, you know, new paint, new carpet, rebrand it, and meet the rules. You literally have to either do a total renovation like we did with that hospital, or you need to build something ground up. When Caliber looked at where the opportunity zones ended up being designated in Arizona, we identified that we were already investing in these areas because we saw that they were up and coming. We could get good deals there, and we were building something those communities needed. At that point, even though we had just launched another fund earlier in 2017 and had no plans to launch a new fund, we knew this was something that we had to get involved with. By the middle of 2018, very few opportunities on the funds had actually been established. So we started creating the fund, and we opened our fund up in the fourth quarter of 2018, and it's really been a huge difference in the amount of deals that we're doing. We've been hiring people here at Caliber. Caliber alone has had to hire probably 20 or 30 more people on our team just to execute these opportunity zone strategies.
Wow, that's awesome.
And that's the marketing, the raising of the capital, deploying the capital where we have project managers that oversee all of the different construction projects. So we at Caliber have actually been creating jobs as a result of launching an opportunity zone fund.
Was this a huge leap for you? I mean, in other words, you were doing other stuff. You weren't, this isn't exactly what you were doing, or did you find that, like, hey, this is, it's already in our locations, places we're already investing. We could really use another opportunity to create opportunities for our investors. But in terms of the projects themselves, was it a giant leap? Like, hey, we have to now learn something completely new? Or was it like, hey, we're already kind of doing this. We're just not necessarily hospitals, but this is right up our alley. Was it a big shift, or was it a pretty easy transition?
There are a lot of rules you have to follow in these opportunity zones to make sure that you don't run afoul of the requirements. So there's definitely a learning curve. You know, we hired a brand new person solely to oversee the tax aspects of it. So it's definitely a large learning curve. But because we've been actively involved in the opportunity zone program basically since the day that it was created, I think that we've learned a lot. And it really, even though it's an extension of our business, it was something that we were already looking, expanding, you know, diversifying into other asset classes, into other geographic areas. And a lot of what we've been doing outside of the Opportunity Zone program, those deals are coming to us because we have this very visible Opportunity Zone fund that has some successes under our belt with the completion of this hotel, building this hospital. We're in the process of building a co-working space in downtown Mesa. So it's really just a natural extension. And it's been really exciting to see the impact that we've been able to make on these different communities on behalf of our investors.
So there's obviously, when the government creates something like this, you have to go through a process. There's a lot of probably red tape, regulations, and all of that stuff that a company must qualify for. So is that what you're saying? Like a lot of that, I mean, what are some of those regulations? What is an example of something that's like, hey, we need to hire additional staff members because this particular regulation, we just have to figure out how to navigate through it. Like what would be some of those regulations that are just really difficult to navigate?
Yeah, a couple examples. And it also talks about the team that we've put in place, including the legal experts and the accounting experts that also had to dig in and start understanding what these rules were to make sure that we at Caliber also understood them. There are certain types of leases that you have to have. You have to have some active involvement. So you can't do triple net leases, as an example.
Okay.
So you have to make sure that who your tenants are, understand what those rules are, and that your leases are being written properly. You have the substantial improvement rule. And I'll use the example of the hospital of how you can't just buy a building and do a minor renovation and meet the requirements. So the substantial improvement rule basically is a dollar for dollar improvement in the value of the building that's in an opportunity zone. But you can exclude the value of the land. When we bought that vacant assisted living facility in Central Phoenix that got converted into the hospital, we paid about $12 million for the land and the vacant building and then put another $11 million into it. So we're all in for about $23 million on basically what became a brand new hospital. We had to make sure that the amount of the improvement that we made in that property met that substantial improvement. So that's another example of it.
Okay. So let's shift and let's talk about, for me, when I think about a prosperous community, there's a couple pillars and a foundation. This is the way I think about it, right? So for me, if I want to have a successful community, meaning like a neighborhood, when I say community, I'm talking about neighborhood, not the people, but the neighborhoods themselves, right? I think number one, you have to have great educational opportunities. And number two, like one pillar, education. Pillar number two is economic opportunity. But here's the thing. It's very hard, in my mind, to create education and economic opportunity if you don't have a foundation of safety, right? And so one of the things that we're, you know, that we're seeing, again, spreading across the country, and not to get down a rabbit hole with this, but, you know, you have defund the police, and it's like, well, how do you take these communities and make them successful if you're going to increase violent crime 100% in some cases, which is what we're seeing? So when you go in and you say, okay, we're going to take this area. Now, a lot of these less fortunate neighborhoods, these lower income type neighborhoods, one of the issues that's there, maybe not always, but as a general rule, crime is one of those things. You talked about homelessness earlier and some of the potential crime that could come from that. And so is this one of those things where you go in and you say, hey, our job, in other words, there's a few things here. Is this something where you start to collaborate with community leaders and say, look, we're coming, we're bringing, but what we need is a strong foundation. We got to clean this thing up because otherwise what we're doing isn't going to work. Or do you build it and then hope and assume that everything around that, including crime, is going to get better as a result of what you've done?
There is a lot of community involvement and collaboration around these. Part of it is just by the nature of the fact that most of the investments that are happening in the opportunity zones are related to real estate, which means that you do need to have the buy-in and the approval of the community. So we're actively in conversations with the mayors and the councils and the economic developers. And we actually go to them and say, what does your community need? And I'm going to use downtown Mesa as the example. For anyone that isn't familiar with Mesa, if you're listening to this podcast from outside of Arizona, Mesa is the 30th largest city in the country. It has the benefit of being connected to Tempe, which is where Arizona State University is based. Arizona State University wanted to build a new campus in the East Valley, and they're building it in downtown Mesa, in an opportunity zone, and it's right on the light rail, which means that there's going to be more educational opportunities for people. And this is a very cool, sophisticated technology-focused campus. Kids are going to be learning about artificial intelligence. The city of Mesa has already been attracting companies from Hollywood, as an example, to tap into that those resources. What Caliber has been doing in the opportunity zones in downtown Mesa has all been in conjunction with the planning of the ASU expansion. It's been with the blessing of the economic development groups, the mayor, the city council. And because we bought vacant buildings, as we're renovating them, we're creating jobs, we're bringing forms of businesses that are typically expansions of successful businesses in other parts of the state that want to be in downtown Mesa because of the excitement around this expansion of Arizona State University. So obviously, if you're taking multiple vacant buildings or ones that had, a good example of it is an antique store that used to be one of the original downtown Mesa department stores. So it was originally built as a department store, and then it became an antique store. When we bought it, we started renovating it to convert it into a co-working space, where now we're going to be helping people create jobs. So if you look at that community, you're also going to identify that there are a lot of people that would love to be able to have the opportunity to start their own business, but they're not sure how to do it. So those resources are going to be brought into that community. We're going to be helping people create jobs. We're also going to be building a food services company. So it's an expansion of an existing business that's doing very well out of Texas. And it's going to be a way for people to launch a food services business and be in an area where people are going to be coming there. So in conjunction with the city of Mesa, you know, if there is crime down there, then the city of Mesa is going to be proactively looking for, you know, how does a person that's down here need help? You know, do they need to be tied into a nonprofit that is providing them with affordable housing or mental health services? So there's absolutely a collaborative effort that includes nonprofits that are providing resources for the people that are in those communities, while Caliber's down there doing the renovation, helping people create jobs and bring some more activity down to these communities.
So there's a collaborative effort, and obviously it's not your role in terms of crime. So it's like we're kind of trusting the city. We collaborate, we trust the city, and at the end of the day, you're going to build it. What about, and again, it may be that in Arizona, we probably, you know, we don't have probably the kind of issue that you would have in LA as an example, but I mean, or maybe you do, maybe you've gone into a community where like, hey, it's not just homelessness here. That's not the kind of crime we're talking about. We're talking about, drug dealing and murder and, you know, gangs and stuff like that. Have you worked on any project like, do you guys have a project like that where you're like, man, is this going to work? Because this is going to be pretty, pretty tough to clean up. Do you have anything like that? Or is most of your stuff kind of more along the lines? I know you've talked quite a bit about homelessness and some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, most of what we've been doing have been in the middle of communities. So if there was already issues with drugs or homelessness, by being able to bring more people into those areas, whether it's building more housing or helping people create jobs, you know, that's really up to the municipalities.
Yeah.
To deal with that.
Of course.
But there are definitely issues with homelessness and drugs in Arizona, probably more so than at any other point. So I think that if you could build a hospital where people can get treatment for drug addiction, that alone is a good way to, you know, help make an impact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm a little bit of a nerd for the behind the scenes. So give us a step by step. Like you find a location, you find a need, take me kind of through, like, you don't have to go through every little single nuance, but take us through kind of like, how do you go from A to Z from finding an opportunity in a location you're interested in a location that has a need, to taking it all the way to an investment process? What is kind of like the basic steps along the way?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple examples. A lot of what Caliber is doing, these are joint ventures, sometimes even public-private partnerships. The Tucson Convention Center Hotel is a public-private partnership with Rio Nuevo, a downtown Tucson redevelopment nonprofit. And we were working with them to meet the requirements of an RFP so we could win the opportunity to build that hotel when the Opportunity Zone program was created. So when we found out that downtown Tucson was an Opportunity Zone, we were almost at the point where we had won that competitive RFP process to be the developer and the owner of the Tucson Convention Center Hotel. It takes years of planning and going through zoning just to get to the point where you can break ground. So once you get to the point where you know that you're going to move forward with a project, you put the pro forma together, you start sharing it with your investors, at the same point that you're working with who your construction team is going to be. So you have to put a team together. Typically, the team is going to be your architects, your engineers, the construction company. So Caliber is going to oversee that. So you go from the idea, hey, it would be really great to be able to build a hotel connected to the convention center. And then go through the legal wranglings and the political opportunities to actually get to the point that you get approved. And then once you get to that point, you can start the building and the construction while you're bringing in who your operators are going to be. So you have to pick the team that's going to actually manage and operate the hotel. So it literally can be 3 to 4 years from the time that you start a project until it gets completed and is up and running. A lot of what we do is a joint venture, so that means that someone else has already identified that there is a need for another hospital in a community. We're in the process of building a school. We're building a school in an opportunity zone, which is going to create more educational opportunities in that area.
A charter school, a private school, or just a
private school, but it could be charter schools.
Okay.
At the end of the day, a school is a business, just like anything else, and they need a campus. So Caliber is going to be building an expanded campus for Rancho Solano School. That's been 2 years in the making, and we're getting ready to break ground before the end of this year, so that at some point those kids will be able to all be on the same campus next to the high school.
Very nice. So I want to let everybody know that anybody that's listening on the audio versions of the podcast, that if you check out the YouTube version, we're going to run some B-roll just showing some of the projects and just kind of a little bit of some of that behind the scenes or some of the projects that you guys have actually worked on or are currently working on. So if you're listening on the audio versions, make sure you go over to the YouTube. And again, you can find that on if you just put it into the search criteria right now, interviews with Arizonans, it'll pop up once we have 100 subscribers. So go on and subscribe. Once we have 100 subscribers, then it'll be youtube.com/interviews with Arizonans. So again, check out the YouTube versions for some of that B-roll. You've talked about some of the projects that you've worked on. I mean, we've already talked about some of the projects. So my next question really was, hey, let's get into a few of the projects, like some of the cooler projects. You've already talked about some pretty cool ones. Are there any other projects that you guys are either working on or have worked on that you think are just really, have been really impactful from a community standpoint that you want to talk about?
You know, we've already talked about several really cool projects where we literally build a hotel and a hospital during COVID.
Yeah, for sure.
We're in the process of building that co-working space. We're helping multiple existing successful Arizona businesses with an expansion into downtown Mesa. What we haven't talked about is something that is in the planning phases. And one of the areas of interest to make an impact in the world in an opportunity zone is related to sustainability and renewable energy. Caliber will be building what are called smart cities in opportunity zones, and the first one is going to be here in Scottsdale.
Wow.
So this is an actual official United Nations program. So it's a United Nations smart cities program that Caliber will be participating in, and one of the first examples of a smart city through this program will be in an opportunity zone with Caliber as one of the partners, and it's going to give us the ability to look at what are the needs of that particular community. Is it workforce and affordable housing? Is it building a tech co-working space? Is it mixed-use retail for the people that are living and working there? And then these are going to be very energy efficient. They're going to be the latest and greatest smart building technologies. And we'll be able to use this as kind of like a showpiece to develop these in other opportunity zones across the country. So that's something that is in the planning stages. The Caliber Opportunity Zone Fund will be one of those investors into it. So this is an ability for, and I'll use the example of a technology founder. Some of our investors are the founders of tech companies that have received venture capital, creates capital gains for them. They invest capital gains into our fund. And now they have the ability to make an impact in the community by literally building smart cities with us. So that's something that is in the planning stages that I'm really excited about.
So you're saying that's the first of its kind in the country, first of its kind in the world? Like when you say first of its kind, you're saying this is the very first project ever, or just in what did I understand that correctly?
This will be one of the first examples of a United Nations smart city in the country. That's correct.
Got it. Yep. Got it. Okay. Before we jump into the fund itself and kind of just how that works, what else, man? What did I miss? What should people know about opportunities? I have a better understanding just through where are we at now? 45 minutes of conversation. I have a better understanding. Is there anything that you think that is important that we haven't discussed that people should know about these programs?
You know, a lot of people are finding out about these because they hear, hey, there might be a way for you to defer your taxes. And they'll go online and they'll start doing some research. Hopefully they find our website. They see some content we've created. What we're finding is that there's not a lot of recognition of this program within the greater financial services community. So it's really important for CPAs and financial advisors and trust and estate planning attorneys, M&A attorneys, to make sure that they understand what these programs are and how it may be a benefit for their clients.
Okay.
Because in 2020, because of the impact of the pandemic, there were a lot of deals for people to buy companies that maybe didn't happen that are happening this year. So we think this year in particular is going to be a large year for people to invest into these opportunity zones. And part of that is because at the end of this year, you do lose that 10% reduction in the amount of the original capital gain.
Right.
So just more awareness within the community. Real estate, if you are selling real estate and you have capital gains, a 1031 is still a great solution for a lot of people, but it's not the right solution for every scenario when you sell real estate. So capital gains that could be protected in an opportunity zone fund as an alternative to 1031 exchanges is another great area of opportunity.
So that's a good segue. So let's talk. We've talked about some of the benefits, obviously, the tax benefits of investing in an opportunity zone. What specifically is an opportunity zone fund? For somebody that's like, hey, how do you create a fund out of an opportunity zone? More specifically, what is the fund itself? Okay. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, the fund is a company. It could be a limited partnership. It could be a multi-member LLC. So it's an entity that is established for the purpose of investing into these opportunity zones. So there's typically an attorney that's going to draft the document. There are investors who have created their own fund. They might have had a $10 million capital gain on the sale of their business. And instead of taking those capital gains and investing into our fund or other funds, they will actually create their own fund. So that is an entity established for the purpose of taking advantage of this program, but they still have to meet all the rules and the requirements that the Caliber Fund does. So there's a lot of compliance, you know, ongoing for the next 10 plus years. You need to make sure that you're meeting all of the rules. So it can be pretty complex to actually set up and operate your own fund. If someone does establish their own fund, now they still have to find the qualifying businesses and projects that they can invest into. Caliber does have other opportunity zone funds that were established that invest side by side into our deals. So an opportunity zone fund can't invest into another fund, but multiple opportunity zone funds can invest into the same qualifying opportunity zone business or project.
So somebody listens to this podcast and they say, hey, you know what? I like the idea of investing into something that's gonna make an impact in the community, that but also where I can receive the tax benefits and get a decent return on my money. Who can invest? Who can actually get involved in the process of investment?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, anyone that has a capital gain theoretically could establish their own fund.
Through you guys. So I mean, if somebody that wanted to come to you and say, look, Brian, they don't want to do all that, but they say, hey, they come to you, VP of Investments, Caliber Co., right? And they say, look, man, I want to get involved with what you guys are doing. What do they need? What needs to happen in order for them to get involved?
Yeah, the first thing is that they do need to qualify as an accredited investor.
And that means?
And that means that they have met a couple different requirements, either related to net worth or income. The income aspect of being accredited means that if you're married, you have to have an income of $300,000 per year for 2 years with an expectation that that will continue. If you're not married, it's $200,000. If you're looking at the net worth requirement, it's a net worth of $1 million or more, single or married, excluding the equity in your primary residence. So if someone has a net worth over $1 million or makes over $200,000 or $300,000 per year, there's a good chance that they would be accredited. There is the ability for someone who has a securities license, like a stockbroker with a Series 7 securities license. They also are considered to be accredited. And people that actually work at companies like Caliber that understand what these deals are and what the risks are, they can also be qualified as accredited. But for the most part, it's based on the level of income or net worth.
Okay, got it. And is there, I don't know how deep you can go into this, is there a minimum investment or what does that
Yeah, mean? When people go to our website, they'll be able to see what those different requirements
perfect.
Are. Correct.
Perfect. And you had mentioned something to me earlier. My next question is, how do people contact you? So, but you had mentioned something earlier to me that I think is really important. And it's funny because I when I heard you say it, it sounds a lot like the reason I created Phoenix Homes and Hotspots, right, is where people can actually go to Phoenix Homes and Hotspots and they can say, hey, you know what? People will watch 3 or 4 of my videos and they'll go, hey, man, I feel like I know Scottsdale. And, oh, by the way, you're my guy, right? But you had mentioned kind of the same thing with Caliber. Somebody could go on to the Caliber, what is it, CaliberCo.com?
Yeah, it's CaliberCo, CaliberCo.com. And then / opportunity. So if they go to CaliberCo.com, they can go on there. You can learn all about the company. You can click on a link to see what the projects that we're doing are. There's one just for the Opportunity Zone program. And you can go in there. You can start watching videos. There's a video just about the Opportunity Zone program. There's videos of the different projects that we've done as well. And then we also have, obviously, a part of the company that has nothing to do with Opportunity Zones. So you can learn about non-Opportunity Zone-related investments for people that don't have capital gains but still want to have a way to invest into real estate with us.
And you had mentioned earlier that for somebody that goes on and just kind of checks out a few of those videos and some of that information, it's going to answer a lot of their questions where they're kind of calling, you know, if they pick up the phone and call you, they're going to be, just that in itself is going to educate them pretty well.
There is. There's a lot of educational material on the website. They can even download a guide, an Opportunity Zone guide from there. And then once they get through that, if they're interested to learn more, they can reach out to us directly through the website.
So I need to let you guys know something about Brian, something that most people don't know. He's popularly referred to as what do people call you? The human LinkedIn?
The human link.
The human link, is that what it is?
It's a nickname.
I feel like back in the day that you were called a few times. I heard you being called the human LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Right. So what I'm trying to say is I want people to be able to reach out and contact you. And I know that there's a lot of ways to do that. I think you and I are connected through Facebook and LinkedIn.
Instagram, Twitter, all the above.
Everything.
I don't TikTok and no one wants to see that. So
nobody
you can
wants
find me on all social media except for TikTok.
I would like to see you dance, man. I'd like to see you do a little investment dance or something. And then I know you're a subscriber of both my YouTube channels. So I appreciate that, my man. If somebody just wants to contact you directly, do you want to give your phone number? Do they just go to the website? What's the best way they say, hey, look, I need to talk to Brian about this. What's your favorite way to be contacted?
Yeah, my name is spelled very uniquely, so I'm super easy to find on the internet. Brian is spelled B-R-I-O-N. Last name Crum, C-R-U-M. So you can just type Brian Crum into a search engine and I'll pop up on LinkedIn and Facebook. My phone number, if someone wants to reach out directly, is 480-881-1906. And then my email address is Brian, B-R-I-O-N, dot Crum, C-R-U-M, at CaliberCo.com.
And we'll go ahead and put that in the description below on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. We'll get all your, make sure all your contact information, website, and all that stuff gets up. So we'll so just check in the description below for that. All right, let's transition. Last little segment. I always like to promote local, right? So I'm just thinking about local restaurants. You and your wife have... you're not even local anymore, man. Every time I contact you, you're like a nomad now. Is there, are you still an Arizona resident? What are you doing now? Like, is there a residency status for nomad? Cause every time I talk to you, you're on the beach in Hawaii or.
Yeah, we technically qualified to be digital nomads. My wife and I sold our house in North Scottsdale in April of 2021. And we've been traveling quite a bit, and I've been able to work remotely and be very effective that way. So we lived a couple months on Maui. We're planning to spend some time in upstate New York next year. We're definitely Scottsdalians. We're Scottsdale residents. We just are living 2-3 months at a time in different places around the world, which is pretty cool.
I'm just jealous. I'm throwing you under the bus because I'm jealous. Scottsdale Phoenix Metro, favorite restaurant. Do you have a place that you and your wife like a local place?
Yeah, my wife and I are both vegan, so we love plant-based locations.
Okay.
We wish that there were more vegan food places, but I have to give a shout-out to one that Caliber has an affiliation with that has several really great plant-based choices called Cook and Craft.
Okay.
This is an example of something that Caliber did where we basically did a renovation of an old Comerica bank branch and turned it into a food and beverage concept that's doing very well, and they're actually expanding. So Cook and Craft, Arizona, is at the corner of Shea and Scottsdale.
Just one location right now?
One location right now. They are expanding into the City North area next to Desert Ridge, though.
Okay. So Shea and Scottsdale. Perfect. How about a local charity or something that you're really passionate about that you support that you want to get the word out on?
Yeah, I want to talk about two different things. One is not a nonprofit, but it's a community for entrepreneurs that was created by entrepreneurs. It's called Eliances, E-L-I-A-N-C-E-S, eliances.com. I actually helped start Eliances with a group of friends about 8 years ago. About a year before I met Chris Loeffler and joined the team here at Caliber. But Eliances is a community built for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. Even though most of our meetings are held here in Scottsdale and Tempe, when the pandemic hit, we started doing virtual meetings with Zoom and Remo.co, which is a collaborative online meeting platform. When someone moves to the Valley and they're trying to find a way to get involved and maybe expand their business, they can become a member, and it's a great way to help people start and grow their businesses. So love what we can do within the community. One of the nonprofits that is also involved in Eliances is a nonprofit that was founded by a mother in the memory of her son, and it helps foster children. It's called Scott. It's the Scott Foundation. So scottfoundation.org. And there are so many kids in the foster system today that they don't get the amount of support as they're transitioning from being a kid into being an adult. And part of what the Scott Foundation does is they bring them mentorship. They actually have a farm where these kids learn how to grow their own food. So they basically built a farm up in North Scottsdale in the last couple of years, and it's amazing to see the impact that the being outdoors has on these kids, because a lot of them come from some pretty tough environments.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Man. So the impact that the Scott Foundation has on these foster kids is really amazing.
Very cool. Brian Crum, man, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your knowledge. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Hey, we have some really, really great interviews coming up on the calendar. So if you haven't already, if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. Again, smash that bell so you're notified every time we do something new. And then, of course, on all the audio platforms as well, make sure that you are connected with us. Until next time, thanks again, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Brian.
Todd, it was awesome being on the show with you today.
Appreciate you, brother.
If you enjoyed this show, remember to subscribe if you haven't already and share this interview. You never know when you might change a life. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you can watch this full podcast episode in our Interviews with Arizonans YouTube channel and engage by liking, sharing, asking questions, and commenting on this or any other interview on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Interviews with Arizonans. Remember, keep asking questions until you get the real answers. We'll see you next time.